You are listening to the Cycling Podcast in association with Rafa, the fastest clothing in the world tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with Rafa in 2019 as they partner EF Education First and Canyon SRAM.
Today we're in Arrowgate.
Heavy rain. We're playing in there with some sounds from today in Harrogate, where we watched the men's elite road race. A little clip there finished with Daniel Oss. Daniel Oss's famous line, of course, which was the appropriate one for today, wasn't it? Where are we, Lionel?
Well, Richard, for the final time this week, we are in Betty's Tea Rooms. I've just finally had a fat rascal. Very nice it was too. Served warm. A big scone, warm with butter and a lovely pot of tea. What a way to round off a cold, damp day in Harrogate.
Francois Thomaso, you're with us too.
Yes, I'm here, yeah. I just had a gunpowder green tea. I don't know why it's, what's the difference between black and green tea?
What, is one black and one green?
I think you're right, yeah. It's like the yellow and the green jersey, the different colors. Okay, well, you know,
glad to
live and learn.
I feel like Daniel Freeb now being a source of that sort of information. A connoisseur of teas. But Francois, Lionel, I mean, the weather has dominated today, hasn't it? We met Seb Piquet last night, didn't we? Who is the voice of Race Radio, obviously, and calls, you know, he sits in the commissar's car, the race director's car, just behind the bunch. And he was on his way for an early night because he had a very early start. But the organisers last night were preparing contingency plans because the forecast for today was so bad that there was a plan A, a plan B, and a plan C. And plan C was basically just to use the finishing circuit.
Absolutely.
But Leeds had invested a lot in these championships. The start was due to be held there. And I woke up this morning to a message from Seb saying it was plan B, which meant that we missed a couple of big climbs, but still started in Leeds.
We did, Richard, yeah. Well, the news was, first thing, that the course was going to be shortened by 24 kilometres, so it's down to 261. And crucially, the climbs of Buttertubs and Grinton Moor were taken out, which was disappointing for fans who were planning to head there, and I think also fans who've been there.
And for the people who built the temporary bridge there, because there was a bridge washed away and a new one built.
But we saw some pictures on social media of the standing water. It was it was at least ankle deep at the bottom of the climbs. To compensate and to keep the distance up, we had 9 laps of the circuit here in Harrogate instead of 7. So the character of the race was altered, and of course we can't really say for sure what impact that had on the race. What we can say is that with only 46 finishes, the lowest total since Lugano in 1996, I believe, in the World Championship Elite Men's Road Race.
Won by?
Johann Museo.
Correct.
I think 30 riders finished that year. I think 20 riders finished in Colombia the year before. But it's pretty rare that under 50 riders would finish the World Championship road race. But that gives you an indication of just how grueling the conditions were. The riders were wet right from the start, and half the battle would have been staying warm at least. And
it was a last man standing affair, wasn't it? And Francois, you and I were around the buses as riders were coming back who'd maybe pulled out early, and riders who'd finished the race as well. I've never seen riders in that state, shivering violently.
There was one came back from from the course rather late, and usually they always scream a little bit because to try and ride through the crowd. But this guy, don't know who he was really screaming, very violently at like, let me pass, because you could tell it was frozen. He really wanted to get to the bus as quickly as possible, take a hot shower. And I stood quite a while at the Columbia bus. That's the only bus that had a TV outside. And I saw Nairo Quintana looking really, in a bad way as well, watching the race from the coach. Actually, most of the guys who started the race this morning in Leeds ended up in the bus watching the race on TV like the rest of us. So, yeah, very grueling World Championships.
Well, shall I summarise what happened out there on the road? There was there was an aggressive start to the race, wasn't there? Dan Martin of Ireland was one of the first riders to try to attack. He didn't really manage to force anything away, but the first break that did go clear had some really big names in it. 11 riders in all, including Primoz Roglic and Richard Carapaz, the winner of the Vuelta and the Giro this year respectively, and Nairo Quintana, of course.
Three Grand Tour winners in there.
In the break, yeah. And there were some other strong riders in there, and they got around 4 minutes lead, but there was never any danger that the peloton was going to let them have more than that, because it could have got out of hand very quickly once they reached the circuit. So it was kept in check and then was brought back under control on reaching Harrogate. There was a crash the first time up the finish straight, which eventually claimed Philippe Gilbert, Belgium's big hope for the world title. Remco Evenepoel, his Belgium and De Koninck Quickstep teammate, waited for him, and that more or less spelled the end for his race as well. And as the laps went by, the abandon started. Roglic pulled out, Gilbert pulled out, the defending champion Alejandro Valverde pulled out. And there was a kind of a period where we didn't know too much about what was going on, because of course we lost TV pictures because the conditions were so bad, and the plane that was relaying the pictures from the motorbikes had to refuel, and we may talk about all of that a bit later on. But there wasn't a great deal of action in that period of the race anyway. And fortunately, we had the pictures back to see the final 70 kilometres, and it really all kicked off with 67 to go when America's Lawson Craddock went. Stefan Kung of Switzerland bridged across, and Kung was there at the finish. But there was a bit of toing and froing as the lead group solidified, as Kung, Mads Pedersen of Denmark, Gianni Moscon of Italy, Matteo Trentin of Italy, and Matthew van der Poel of the Netherlands. And the hot favourite with a lot of people, van der Poel, they had enough of a gap that they were looking very likely, from quite a long way out. Then the big shock of the day was that van der Poel completely blew up with 12 and a half kilometres to go. Moscon, who'd done a lot of work in the break, cracked with around 6 kilometres to go, and that meant that Trentin, Pedersen and Kung were guaranteed the medals, more or less, because the group behind wasn't making any inroads. Belgium were trying to close the gap unsuccessfully. Peter Sagan and maybe one or two others tried to ride across, but weren't getting anywhere. And so we came into the finish, and if I'm a lucky man, because I would have bet my house on Matteo Trentin as they came round the final corner there at the bottom of the hill. I thought he had it in the bag, but he opened up his sprint possibly a bit too early, 200 and something metres to go, and Mads Pedersen got him before the line and had time to just glance round and put his arms in the air and become the first male men's elite world champion for Denmark. Trentin second, Kung third. And as I said, only 46 finishers, a really hard day. So before we discuss the ins and outs of the race, let's hear from three of the riders who came through the mix zone at the finish. Michael Matthews of Australia, Jakob Fuglsang, teammate of the new world champion, of course, and finally Yorkshire's Ben Swift, who also rides for Great Britain.
I was horrendous. Yeah, not too many words can describe that day. Just one of those ones that just winds you down, and you try and accelerate at the end and have nothing. I knew it was always going to be difficult. It was always going to be a bit of a gamble of a race, and I think with four laps to go, when a group of five I think went, we didn't have any guys there to go with it. I was trying to wait for the last two to three laps before I moved, and they didn't come back.
We have a super strong team, and probably the strongest team we had had in a long time. But of course, we maybe didn't have this one guy that you would say, okay, this is the favorite. But today was not about being the favorite. It was about having balls and legs, and of course taking the chance and having a bit of luck.
I have to see this one now.
I haven't seen it yet. it was a little bit okay. They say Van der Poel. He's still young, and it's a long race, and it's a tough race, and he probably also paid the price for that. I'm not sure if we had a world champion before in the men's, so it's one of the biggest results. We have had a lot of junior world champions, and Mass have been world champion I think before as a junior also, but elite men is something different. I didn't plan to get too drunk, because there's also some Italian races coming up, but it's for sure going to be a party.
It was a really tough day out there. Pretty epic weather. I think it probably looked quite cool on some of the photos and stuff like that, but it actually got really cold there as well towards the end. And you know, when it's already cold like that, you know you need to start stripping off, getting ready to the finish and stuff. But we gave it our good shot. So, you know, it was quite windy in times, and it was a lot of big, deep puddles out there, which made it quite difficult. And this climb here, this finishing circuit, was really difficult. That the steep climb is Old Bank Road or something was that was really hard. I think it's perhaps the hardest one that I've done. Each one's been a little bit different, you know. Qatar was pan flat, and the crosswinds in pretty warm weather. The thing that you had here was like really short punchy climbs, which in this weather made it really difficult.
The fastest clothing in the world tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with Ratha in 2019 as they partner EF Education First and Canyon SRAM.
Thank you very much to our title sponsor, Ratha, and the Ratha pop-up cafe. It was a popular place to be today to watch the race. I went in there a couple of times, saw Tanil Kangert in there. You said, Lionel, that a lot of the riders ended up on their team buses. Tanil Kangert, who rides for EF Education First, of course, he was in there drinking his coffee, watching the race, having not finished it. Not sure that he was recognised, so I'm paying for his coffee in there. But he was there. Lots of other people were there. And I spoke to the gentleman who runs the bar the rest of the year, and owns the bar, which is Starling. It's called Starling Bar and Restaurant, I believe. And he said that it will remain, have a link with Ratha beyond the World Championships. They are going to be a sort of satellite branch of the Ratha clubhouses. So I'm sure will remain very welcoming to cyclists and cycling fans. But it's been a busy place. And there's so much to unpick from today's race, isn't it? As we watched it mainly indoors, and the already from the start, the coverage was compromised by the fact the helicopters couldn't take off, so we were getting images only from the motorbikes, and then they disappeared as well. And it was one of those days where we thought this is a a race where things will happen that we don't see, and you know, there could be a mystery to be solved at the end. And I'm not sure that really what was the case. It was a race that was very much a kind of not so much the same as the women's race yesterday, where there was no breakaway for the bunch to chase. There was a breakaway today, but it didn't get that far, Lionel. Rowan Dennis of Australia on his BMC bike was very, very kind of quite a lot of responsibility for the fact that the break never got beyond sort of 5 minutes was down to him. He sat in the front for a lot of the way, which meant the Australian team, I think, were confident in Michael Matthews. It really was a race that was sort of won from the front, you know, and riders were getting spat out the back throughout. And in the end, as you say, Lionel, that five-man group from the front with Trenton and Van der Poel, the last two across, was how the race was in the end won.
I think it's in the end, actually, in spite of the conditions that were terrible, it was a very classic, you know, circuit race. You know, the circuit format is very often the same thing. It's kind of the elimination race, because the temptation for riders, well, when you ride on a circuit and there were nine laps this time instead of the seven they were scheduled in the first place, it's even easier to give up or to call it quits, because you know at every lap you'll have an opportunity to call it quits. So I guess it's psychologically, especially at the end of the season, it plays a part. And it, as you said, in the past we've seen other world championships when guys give up one after the other. But even all the many kind of circuit format races I've seen, it's kind of always the same. It's you know, you say it's from the front. Yes, it is. But in the same, it's also from the back. You have every lap. You have fewer and fewer riders. And what they were all saying today is that it was so hard that they each one after the other reached their limits. We saw to take the Eritreans. There were three Eritrean riders in the bunch. Good riders. I mean, Nathaniel Beran, Kudus. I mean, guys who were riding the World Tour. They were out of the race before the first lap, and then gradually, let's take Julien Alaphilippe, who was among the favorites. Two laps before the finish, as Thomas Vöckler told me, he told his teammates, "I can't go any further." And then you had Mathieu van der Poel in the leading group, and all of a sudden, 10 km from the finish. Finished, nothing left in the tank. Same for Matteo Trentin. We all thought of 1K to go. Is one, you know, is the fastest of the three, and he attacked. I mean, when you think what a clever, tactical, astute rider is Trentin generally. I mean, his attack was absolutely terrible. It was lame.
Sprint.
Yeah. It came at the worst possible moment. He had no stamina, no power, no kick at all. And in the end, who won? Well, the strongest guy on the day, and as Philippe Gilbert, whom I talked to and will listen to him later, said, well, you know, it was won by a solid, bulky 80 kilos guy, because he still had, you know, a little bit of reserves when all the other had eaten up all they had.
A guy who still lives in Denmark as well, and you know, it's a bit of a cliche to say riders like that ride better in these conditions, but it was a day where there were quite a few sort of Scandinavian. You know, Alexander Kristoff was up there in seventh, a real danger man today. Peter Sagan always rides well in these conditions as well. Trenton does too. You know, I mean, he won the European Road Race Championship in Glasgow last year, and went in similar conditions, yeah. Actually.
And Mats Pedersen, everybody was saying, is not, well, it is a surprise, but it's not so much of a surprise for the ones in the know, because I mean, lots of riders told me they expected him since he turned pro to do much better than he did. He came second in Tour Flanders once, and he just won the Grand Prix d'Isbergues. It's not a great race, but it showed that he was in great shape, and once again, he is a rider who did very, very well in the amateur ranks, and maybe comes of age just at the right time.
Yeah, Pedersen said in the press conference afterwards that the idea was for him to go in that kind of first move in the final, which was the one that was kicked off by Craddock and Kung. Craddock didn't last the distance, but Stefan Kung did. You said it was a kind of classic circuit race. I was left with the impression that it wasn't a classic World Championship race because it missed out a phase in that finale. Normally, that 65k to go move is the sort of the preamble, the one that leads to the one that comes later. But I think everyone was just so tired that there was nothing for anyone to come later.
When I saw Tim Wellens, who usually relishes these kind of conditions, when I saw him dropped by the main bunch, I thought, oh well. I mean, the stronger team on paper, that was Belgium, losing Gilbert and then Wellens, and Greg Van Avermaet, my favorite at the start, was nowhere to be seen. And we saw Moscon also. We saw a succession of
collapses.
Guys. Yeah, of collapses.
But Denmark's plan was that Pedersen would go around that mark and look for that kind of move, knowing that Valgren and Fuglsang were the ones that could maybe come later. But that opportunity never came, even though the gap was never too much. And I think we just saw that this was a kind of a strange circuit, really, when you boil it down. We didn't see quite so much of it today, but from seeing it yesterday, my impressions of it were that very, very hard to chase on in an organised way. Not quite city centre-y like the Glasgow one that Trentin won on in the Europeans last year, but not the sort of wide open World Championship courses that we've seen in the past. And also not with the real focal point of that set piece climb that everyone knows, right, that's the moment. It was kind of hard all the way around we saw Van der Poel's legs went at an unpredictable kind of, you thought, well, why has he run out of gas there? I mean, it just didn't look much on the TV. And likewise, Moscon was just distance on that final climb.
there weren't obvious places to attack and bridge across. But another factor in that second big attack coming from the favourites was that a lot of those favourites had lost important teammates early on. So that group was, there weren't enough helpers there to really control the pace and to set up their leaders, and so Belgium did quite a lot, but there weren't enough, and France a little bit too, but there weren't enough kind of Yves Lampaert type riders there to really drag
it back.
The
problem is, if you take France, Rémi Cavagna spent half the race in the front, and two laps from the finish, Julien Alaphilippe told him, "I'm dead." So they worked in a way, they worked for nothing. Also, I think some of these guys misjudged the course, and as you said, it was very difficult course to decipher, to read well. Sagan is an example. He launched an attack in the finale, in kind of chased behind the leading group, but in the last 5Ks he was far too late, so I think they didn't see it coming. I mean, it was an intriguing finale because of that.
I also wonder, with the wet, that makes it harder to really take advantage on the downhills and on the sweeping corners. They're probably taking a bit more speed off, well, certainly taking a bit more speed off than they normally would, which means that then they have to spend more effort putting that speed back on when the road levels out and starts to rise again. So a real kind of, a course that lay in wait and set traps for them. And, well, the two most obvious traps were fallen into by Van der Poel, who, again, just from watching on the TV and looking at the body language, he looked so good until then suddenly he didn't. And Trentin, of the three of them, when there was a front-on shot, Kung had his mouth open and was really working hard. And we were saying, well, what's he putting all this effort in here for? But I guess because he knew he had a very good chance of getting a guaranteeing himself a medal. But of the three in the front, Trentin looks to have it absolutely under control.
And he was lucky because I think Pedersen as well was riding for a medal, and I think he was with two guys who, especially when Moscon, and it wasn't just Moscon being dropped, but he'd been dropped the lap before as well. Yeah. He was obviously tiring, and so that helped Trentin enormously, because Trentin, I think, was clearly the favourite and was saving a little bit for the sprint and was foxing a little bit on the final lap. But I also think in these conditions, sometimes guys don't know how their bodies are going to react when they do, you know, sit up, you know, stand up and press on the pedals. And it looked to me like that's what happened to Trenton, that when he went to make that finishing effort, and, you know, perhaps Pedersen in particular was helped by the fact that he didn't really sit, he didn't really try and play any games. He kept working through.
No, I think he was the one, as you know, lots of guys said, with the guy with the most reserves. I mean, he still had a little bit of fuel in the tank at the finale, when which was not the case for the rest. I know we don't like the what ifs, but still, you know, if the race, I mean, the original, you know, course had been used with 24Ks more than what we got, plus two climbs, it would have made a different scenario. But in terms of wearing out the bodies, it would have been maybe even more dreadful than what we saw.
Shall we hear from the victorious Danish camp? I mean, Mads Pedersen is a rider we don't know that well. He's young, he's 23 years old. He was second at the Tour of Flanders. I found out at the Danish team bus at the finish that he's coached by André Stenson, who is the brother-in-law of Michael Valgren, and they're both coached by Stenson, who was a pretty average professional, rode for, remember that team, Cult Energy? He rode for them, and he's also Michael Valgren's brother-in-law. He's married to Valgren's sister. They're very close, Valgren and Pedersen. And Valgren, and I think we didn't really probably appreciate what a strong team they had, because Jakob Fuglsang, we were talking about him, but when you consider Valgren and Pedersen were obviously in great form, that was three very strong hands they had to play. And Valgren got away in the end with, he marked Sagan and he ended up sixth, which is easily his best result of the season. So I spoke at the finish to Anders Lund, the national coach, used to be a professional rider as well. Spoke to him and to Michael Valgren. Let's hear first from Anders Lund and then from Michael Valgren. Well, a historic day for Danish cycling today. You must be delighted.
I'm overwhelmed, actually. We knew we had actually a decent chance of being in the final, and also with more than one. So, and we knew actually that these weather conditions was in our favor, and especially for Mads Pedersen, he's a beast under these conditions. And I think that's why he won today. He was able to keep warm, anticipated the big move from some of the favorites, and in the end, outsprinted Trentin, who was the favorite in that sprint.
He went quite early on in the race. I mean, he was out there a long, long time. Was the plan for him to be an early card to play before maybe Fuglsang, and Valgren as well was very strong in the end?
Exactly. That was his way to do the final. He succeeded in that actually a few times, also in his Berg, which he won not that long ago. And also he was came in close and doing the same thing a week or two before. So he is strong when he gets out there, and in a final like this, when you have the favorites coming bridging the gap, then they're more equal, because it's a big move they make from the bunch. So and in that situation, he's just amazingly strong, and I knew that he would give Trentin a fight in the sprint.
I was going to ask, what were you thinking that final lap? I mean, most people thought Trentin was a favourite, but what were you thinking? Were you preparing to settle for maybe silver or bronze medal?
I was a little bit afraid that that Mads was pulling for the medal, but I also knew that wouldn't be like him. He's a winner. And he rode like he had the legs, and that was my hope that he would go for the gold medal, and he did.
We'll all get to know him a lot better over the next year's world champion. What's he like? I mean, what can you describe his personality for us?
He is really straightforward, nice guy, decent kid. And then he's also really professional with his stuff, and he's a really it's important for him that his bike is ready and clean and well functioning, and then he's a cool kid. He cracks jokes, and then he's also outspoken also to the bosses if he disagrees on something, but always with respect. He's a good kid.
Gally, I mean, you and Mads are very good friends, aren't you?
Yeah, really good friends. We've been friends for a long time, and like we have the same manager, and we always like party every year and have the same coach, so we had a lot of mutual things together, so I'm just so freaking happy for him.
You'll be happy for him, but yeah. A very strong ride from yourself as well. I mean, you marked Peter Sagan when he went and finished sixth in the end.
Yeah, so that's pretty all right. Like, I was happy I was in the final. That was my goal of today. And I think we did a good race, like to back off the race for Mats. He's just so strong, you know, like we came to the circuit or the first time he almost attacked. I was like, oh, Mats is too early. No, I'm just so good. You know, like, you know, when he's on a day like this, nothing can stop him. So it's just so deserved.
But were you surprised to hear that he'd won when you came to finish yourself?
Yeah, I was surprised because there was two Italians up there. So I saw that they, like, you know, play the cards because they were like more riders in front. But yeah, you know, in a sprint, I would think he could beat them, and he easily did also because Mats is fast, and after such a long race, he's even faster. So, but it came as a little surprise, I must say, and I was like really emotional when I saw like Mats, yeah, wow. So that was really good.
Ever raced in more difficult conditions than that?
I don't think so. It was raining all day. Super cold as well. Normally I don't really freeze, but I was shivering today plenty of times. I changed my rain jacket like three times, but it didn't help. But yeah, it was a real men's race today. Yeah.
And for yourself, I mean, you've not had the best season and had a few problems.
Yeah.
It must be great to finish the season in this sort of form.
It's so good. Like I finally feel myself again. If you know what I mean. Like it's been a hard year. Like, I don't know really what's been going wrong, but yeah. So it's just nice to finish off well.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton. Cycling podcast team car at the back of the pack, please.
How would all of you listeners out there like a free case of beer from our friends at Beer 52? All you need to do is go to beer52.com/cycling and pay the £4.95 postage, and your selection of beers will be delivered to you. Well, Beer 52 they're pioneers, aren't they? Because they curate beers from all over the world, craft beers, and they basically give you a selection to try each month, Richard. When your last case arrived, what did you enjoy?
Well, it's not actually the last case, Lionel, but the next case, or the case that might be waiting for me when I get home, because now that the World Championship Cycling has finished, we've got the Rugby World Cup on, and the latest case from Beer 52 is called Rugby Nations, and it's dark beers selected from some well-known rugby nations.
After yesterday's result.
And some less well-known rugby nations, like France, for example.
Oh.
The Ninkasi Brewery near Lyon. Have you heard of that, Francois?
Never.
Never. Well, there's a couple of beers from there, a kind of wheat beer and a blonde beer. Which are in one of the Beer 52 selections, which sound very nice indeed. So if you want to, you know, enjoy the Rugby World Cup while sipping a beer, perhaps relevant to one of the countries you're watching, then that's what to do.
I hope after the result between Ireland and Japan, if there's an Irish stout in there, that it's going to have a bit more punch than the Irish team did. I'm sure it will.
Ooh. As a proud Irishman, that Lionel.
Absolutely. Very disappointing result that was. Anyway, if you would like to have the selection of Beer 52 beers delivered to you, then go to beer52.com/cycling and you'll get your first case of 8 beers for free. If you sign up in the next 2 weeks, you get an extra 2 unmissable beers for free. That's beer52.com/cycling. You'll also get a snack and a copy of Ferment magazine.
My impression for France in the Rugby Union World Cup is that the beer will be drinking will be bitter.
Well, we heard before the break there from Anders Lund, the coach of the Danish national team, and also from Michael Valgren, 6th, the Dimension Data rider, who's had a terrible season and will be pleased to finish it strongly. But the big shock today was Matthew van der Poel, I think. I was in the Rafa shop when there were some members of his fan club in there, and when he made his move with Trenton, there were, you know, gasps of sort of anticipation. This was the moment when people thought, you know, he was making the move that would end up with him being crowned world champion. I think a lot of people thought that this was his race, and for him to make his move around 30 kilometers to go before any of the other big favorites did, he looked, you know, clearly very confident. And the moment when he cracked was really quite shocking, wasn't it, Lionel? We were watching that in the press tent, and people were sort of stunned because, you know, just a couple of weeks ago he was absolutely dominating the Tour of Britain against Matteo Trentin.
But against Matteo Trentin over a much shorter distance. And there were some funny things about Van der Poel I noticed today. Early on in the race, he had a sort of grey rain jacket on, which wasn't fitted too well, it didn't look to me. It was sort of all baggy around the shoulders. And then I actually remarked to, was it you, Richard? Saying that it was almost like he was trolling the rest of the break, because he was riding along for a long time with his gilet flapping around, unzipped and flapping around, and I was thinking, well, you know, even I know that it's more aerodynamic to zip that up. It can't have been because he was getting too warm, surely. It was cold out there, but yeah,
that's right. I guess it's difficult to do with cold, very cold hands. That's the problem for a lot. I mean, a lot of riders had problems with their clothing and getting overshoes off and things like that because I think their hands were so cold.
And then when he went pop, he really did go completely pop. And he finished, I think, 43rd out of 46, 10 minutes 52 behind Mads Pedersen. And he lost all of that. I mean, obviously, once he'd been passed by the bunch there, he was just riding in. But, it was a spectacular explosion, really, or implosion, rather.
In a way, I mean, I've said it before, the words, you know, he was not among my favourites. And I'm happy for him as well that he didn't win it, because everybody was saying, and he's such a phenomenon, and it's been so impressive every time he wins a race, you know, he wins it a la Merckx, you know, like boom, attacks when he wants, and then, you know, and today again it looked like, you know, he moved when he wanted to move. He was in that group that, you know, threatening the all the others. You can tell there was some sort of a panic in the chasing group. You know, they couldn't make up for lost time in a group with Van der Poel in. And all of a sudden, Van der Poel is not in there anymore. And so, in a way, for me, it's a good thing, because I had the impression, even in the interviews before the Worlds, that he was a little bit overconfident. You know, Van der Poel is young, very, very talented, and you had the impression everything was going fine. He had never had any problem. You have to suffer a little bit to know the value of victory. And today, I think he really did learn a lesson. He was. I talked to him in the bus at the finish line, and he was actually at a loss to explain what happened. You know, he was not even sure it was fringale, as we say in French, like meaning, you know, a fit of hunger. Because actually, he said in the last case, he was feeling much better. So something happened. You know, he realized that, like everybody else, he has his limits, and I think it's good for him. It's a good lesson learned. Well, maybe we can listen to Mathieu Van der Poel.
Mathieu, you look very strong at first and almost until the finale, and then all of a sudden what happened?
I don't know, all of a sudden I had no strength anymore in the legs, so I don't think I made a mistake today. I was in the right group, I felt pretty good, but then all of a sudden the tank was empty.
Has it happened to you in the past to bonk like this?
No, but it's also the first time I raced this distance in the rain. We hadn't had 5K dry, I think, today. It was rain all day, very cold, and it was very hard race. Yeah,
tell us about the conditions. I mean, so much rain. I mean, it was kind of extreme. I mean, the course was changed. Lots of things, very extreme race.
Yeah, it's a world championship I will remember for a long time. I think every rider who rode it will remember it for a long time. It was extremely cold by some moments, and like I said, I was in a good group. I did everything right, but all of a sudden, no energy anymore.
What's the feeling now? Frustration, disappointment, or you did everything you could, actually?
No, I did everything I could. Of course, I wanted more today, but it's not that I was close to the title. So it's a missed opportunity, but there will come more.
Well, that was Mathieu Van der Poel in conversation with Francois at the finish. Well done, Francois. I mean, you know, I think it's kind of unfair to judge him on that performance in a way, and anybody, because the conditions were so extreme that it's very hard to get everything right, fueling and clothing in particular. And if you get either of those things wrong, you really suffer the consequences. And he was one of the riders who I saw coming to the bus at the end who looked in the most distress. I mean, he was shaking really quite in quite an extreme way, you know, and he was one of those guys who I thought, you know, he's going to fall ill after this. This has been his body's been exposed to the elements here. And he, you know, like you mentioned about the gilet, Lionel, that could be quite significant or quite telling.
Well, yeah, Trentin was asked in the press conference whether he felt that it was in the pocket as they came around the final corner, as I thought it was. And of course, Trentin said, well, it's never in the pocket, as you can see, because he wasn't sitting in the middle of the top table in the rainbow jersey. And he did say, you know, these little things all add up and contribute over 6.5 hours. He said he took his jacket off at the start of the last lap and maybe regretted that. And he said it was a matter of a million things today. And, yeah, those small decisions that you couldn't pinpoint one thing will all have contributed. But when we talk about Van der Poel and he is a sensation, we must also recognise that Pedersen is almost a year younger than, 11 months younger. And you know, we've not... Well, Pedersen's second place in the Tour of Flanders last year didn't get the same kind of fanfare and, you know, excitement as Van der Poel's performances this spring, but as Pedersen said in the press conference afterwards, you know, he has been playing the underdog role, but that's pretty much impossible for him now.
But it's partly the dynamic way that Van der Poel races that gets that attention, and you know, you talk about overconfidence, Francois. I think it's sometimes hard to know whether that's coming from the rider or whether it's being projected onto him by, you know, fans, media, and all sorts of other people. There is this hype around him, and I think he said, you know, in your interview that there are many more world championships that he will contest. And I think he is a rider who, with his talents, will probably win the world title one day.
I have a little story about it. I don't know if I should tell it, but yeah, I will. Because it's, you know, it's happened in the dressing rooms. Pauline Ferrand-Prévot, you know, the French woman who was world champion many times and was world champion mountain bike again this time. She told a couple of journalists that she was when she won recently, she was waiting in the dressing rooms for the doping control, and came Mathieu Van der Poel, and she didn't know whether you know what he was doing there, and so she asked him, oh, so Mathieu, what did you do? And he looked at her and say, what do you mean, what did I do? Are you doubting me? Like, of course I won, you know? So that's what I mean. You know, the guy...
Yeah, okay. I take it back.
So, I mean, you know, I think that it'll be... It's good for his career. Now he knows it from time to time. If you don't play it right, everything's not perfect. Even if you weigh, you know, better than the rest of... it can go wrong. And I think it's great. That's the way he's learning his trade.
A guy who we, you know, fancied based on his form at the Vuelta today was Philippe Gilbert. And again, in a world championship, such a long race, everything has to go right. And when I saw him have a puncture quite early on, you know, back on quite easily, although sat behind some cars to get back on, as one or two other high-profile riders did, which drew a lot of comments after the disqualification a few days ago. This is how riders get back on. They generally sit behind the cars. Anyway, he got back on, but even that little effort and that disruption to his race, I thought at the time that, you know, you can almost sort of discount Gilbert in a way. That these little efforts, Julien Alaphilippe had one as well. Those little efforts are so important in the final analysis, because it is like starting the race with a full tank of petrol, and the challenge is to use it as efficiently as possible.
Well, another lesson that we learned, and we should know because we've been doing that for a while, is you know, to try and forecast races is always a difficult, risky game, and we 99% of the time we get it wrong, and it's probably even worse at the World Championships. I mean, we had to, because we were asked to do it, and everybody is always asking before a great competition like the Worlds, who do you fancy to win? So we all talked about Mathieu Van der Poel. We talked about lots of people. Were the Belgians as a team were really fancied to do well, and as I said, Gilbert crashed pretty badly. And then Remco Evenepoel, that was a very strange decision. Well, maybe not a strange decision, but it was maybe, disputable decision to ask Remco Evenepoel, who could have been maybe, played a role in a finale, to wait for Gilbert. He did. So that was two Belgians out of the way, in a sense. Then Greg Van Avermaet was my favorite, was never in contention. Tim Wellens was, really bad. Yves Lampaert, played his usual role, which is, setting the pace and to no effect. So it was a big disappointment by the Belgians, and probably most of all for Philippe Gilbert. And maybe the reason why Remco Evenepoel waited for him was that he was the designated leader in the Belgian camp.
Well, yeah, I had another thought about that, though, because I had a flashback to San Sebastian when Evenepoel waited for Alaphilippe, I think, and helped him back on and then won the race. So, you spoke to Gilbert as well at the finish. I mean, he abandoned early, former world champion, one of the favourites. And here he is in conversation with Francois Thomazeau at the finish.
Philippe, a crash early on in the race. I mean, it was very unfortunate today.
Yeah, it was first flat tire, and then lately in the race I crashed, and I still don't really understand the reason. It looked like, I don't know, I lost control of my bike. I didn't touch anyone, I didn't hit anything, and I just went down, and quite hard also, because when you don't expect it, you cannot avoid anything. So it was a bad crash, and there I lost everything. So
you looked a little bit stunned. Is there any injury or anything, or do you feel better now?
It was really painful on the first moment, also because of the cold, when it's a shock like that and you crash, you feel it twice more, I think. And then also I was trying, with the help of Remco Evenepoel, to come back. We did everything, but at that point of the race, it was full on, and it was not possible to come back.
Finally, the conditions. We were expecting rain, but it was bad.
Oh, it was extreme. It was like really, really bad. Some points of the race, we had like up some places 20, 30 centimeters of water on the road, and it was almost not possible to go by back. We had to go really slow to not crash, and it was also cold, and I was in the bus watching the race, and we saw like a lot of guys just dropping, like Van der Poel, out of energy. This is due to the weather. You don't have sometimes the will or the opportunity to eat, and you burn so much energy, and then at one point you dropped. And this is typical of this this weather and the distance.
Mats Pedersen, young rider, you know him?
I don't really know him. I know he was second in Flanders. The year was third there behind him. And that day he also did a great number. And since then he was a bit searching his road, I think. But last week he came back with a nice win in Eisberg. And today, a really nice win for him. So he's an expert, I think, of this kind of weather. So I think it's you have to admit that some days it's like typical from some kind of riders. And if it was like 25 degrees, you would have seen like a skinny guy of 60 kilo winning. And today was like a guy of almost 80 kilo winning, because there is this bitter to this weather.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much to Science in Sport for their support of the Cycling Podcast. And Matthew van der Poel, if you're listening, you can get 25% off your Science in Sport products. If you don't want, we don't know that's what happened, but it looked like that, didn't it? It looked like that. Not the only rider. And Trenton was asked about it at the finish. He said maybe he just missed a gel or something. It could have been as small as that. But if you don't want to miss a gel, then use the Science and Sport codes, SISCP25 at scienceandsport.com for 25% off all your Science and Sport products. So what other business? I mean, we're going to hear Francois in conversation with someone else in a moment, because he was just cleaning up at the buses, the Mads Pedersen of our team. But the other big favourite, or one of the other big favourites, was Julien Alaphilippe, wasn't he, the Frenchman?
Yes, I waited for him at the bus, and he took a very long time to come down because he was taking a shower. And Thomas Vogler is now the new French captain. I mean, you know, he started his new job as the French national coach this year. Came down and say, well, you know, you have to wait a bit because Julien is really, really knackered. So, well, you know, because I was a little bit cool myself, I decided to talk to Thomas Vogler about the reason why Julien Alaphilippe didn't perform as well as he expected, and also about the conditions, because that's what everybody was talking about. So here is what Tommy Vogler had to say.
Thomas, is it a disappointment today for Julien, or the conditions were really, really too hard for everybody today?
Yeah, the conditions are the same for everybody, but for sure Julien is disappointed, but all the teams has worked as we expect, as we say it yesterday. And after is only physically that Julien could not follow Van Der Poel and Trentin when they go, so yeah, we are disappointed, but we have no regrets on what we decided to do.
The conditions today, did you see this kind of conditions in other major championships in the past?
Well, maybe in Florence in 2013, but it was pretty hot today because it was raining, and the distance, it's about 7 hours of cycling. It's really a difficult sport, and today it's one of the hardest races of the previous year.
We saw Mathieu Van Der Poel bonk completely. Yeah. We saw Julien in trouble. It was really, really hard.
Yeah. There is only one winner, and you have a lot of guys, including Julien or Van Der Poel, for example, who, when you have these conditions, you cannot expect how your legs are going to be in 10 kilometers, for example.
Disappointing day for the French, really. Rémi Cavagna was doing lots of work to no overall effect in the end. Quick word on the British. I mean, Ben Swift was in there until relatively late on, pretty late on, but was detached. Adam Yates also looking pretty, you know, just one of those riders that just tucked away, hiding away until relatively late on, but then I don't think finished. But one little quirk before we talk about the Italians, who had a good day, perhaps not the perfect day, but a good day. The three men on the podium today have all won small races in the last couple of weeks. A fortnight ago, Stephen Kung won the Tour du Doubs in Brittany. And last weekend, Mads Pedersen won the Grand Prix d'Isberg in northern France. And Matteo Trentin won the Trofeo Matteotti in Italy. So not huge wins by any stretch, and I'm not suggesting that those three races would in future years be indicators of who's going to pull on the rainbow jersey, but nevertheless an interesting little trend that the three riders that contested the finish had all tasted victory recently. Interesting.
And how many of them had ridden the Tour of Britain? I mean, Trentin, obviously, Van Der Poel, who was there for a lot of the time. Did Jenny Moscon not ride the Tour of Britain as
Moscon
well?
Did ride the Tour of Britain,
so
finished
quite
sixth
a few
overall
up there, you know, who'd ridden the Tour of Britain, and no one was up there really who'd ridden the Vuelta, were they?
Not really, no. We'd have to do a deep dive into that to find the first rider who'd ridden
Gorka
Vuelta.
Izaguirre in ninth,
yeah. The Canadian race is probably also a reasonable indicator, perhaps.
They usually are, but this time, you know, when you see Michael Matthews and Greg Van Avermaet, where the problem with the Canadian race is, I think that's the main problem. They're the same format, but they're not in the same part of the earth, or not the same weather at all. And in the same time, sometimes probably the jet lag can affect, you know, the bodies, especially in the hard courses like that.
Richard made the point, didn't you, that Valgren's had a terrible season, first season with Dimension Data, certainly in contrast to how well he was riding with Astana last year. A very fair comment, but this month had actually been pretty good for him because he was fourth at the Bretagne Classic and fifth at the Grand Prix in Montreal. So clearly some signs there that he was returning to his best.
Yeah, and I was asked by Yorkshire 2019 several weeks ago, before the Canadian races, for my tips for the world, and I tipped Michael Valgren, I'd like to say. Now, that was based on a Bink Bank tour, actually. Just there were just signs there, little signs that he might be returning to some kind of form, and he's too good a rider just to become a bad rider. And I remember at the Worlds last year, he almost won. He might have won had there not been that very steep climb right at the end. He's a really, really quality rider, and I expect if he can, you know, get his health and his fitness right, then he could be a real force next year. Yeah.
What about the Italians then, lastly? Because they had two riders in the final five, and in that position, the pressure is on to bring home the bacon, so to speak. But it's Denmark that's synonymous with bacon,
isn't it? Danish reference there, Lyle.
Yeah, well, there we go. It just all joins up.
There's the makings of a joke in there somewhere.
There is. If anyone wants to join the docs, they can do so. But Moscon and Trentin, they really worked well together, didn't they? Moscon did a lot of work for Trentin and allowed Trentin to have a relatively easy ride.
Moscon looked really good until it was Moscon.
Well, if you look at
there are makings of a joke in there, Richard.
That's the finished article. That's been honed for hours.
But going back to the Italians, it's kind of their race to World Championships. I mean, they released that sort of they kind of, you know, always up their game when the national, you know, the jersey is at stake, and one of the, you know, how could I say, a guy who really relishes this sort of event. He was a European champion in the past. Is Matteo Trentin. I mean, he is the kind of guy who is always very good. Well, today, unfortunately for him, he was beaten. But once again, he's always good in this sort of formats, and always good when he's riding for his country. And Italy have always set the pace. You know, it's very common in World Championships throughout the Olympics to see the Italians having a very clear strategy on who's doing what at what stage in the race. I mean, as Daniel told us before, you know, they kind of discuss the strategy the night before in some pizzeria or some Thai restaurant, I don't know.
Pizza Hut.
And yet they're on a terrible run. 11 years without a rainbow jersey in the men's That's elite right. road race. Mm-hmm. And Trentin's silver medal there is the first time they've had anyone on the podium since Balan and Cunego got gold and silver in Varese in 2008. I wouldn't be surprised if that 11-year drought is the longest gap between Italian men's elite road race champions. And in fact, looking at the records, I think it probably is. Certainly till going back to the period after the Second World War.
Well, chaps, our week in Harrogate is almost at an end, isn't it? Our week in Betty is almost at an end. What have been your impressions, Francois? Your first World Championship in 30 years, have you enjoyed it?
Oh yeah, I really did enjoy it. As I said before, I like the format. I like the fact that it's all in the same place. I like the fact that, you know, circuit races, you know, laps mean for the public. It's a great, you know, it's a great festival. It's a great party because you could see the riders pass once, twice, many times. And I think there should be more races of this format in the World Tour calendar because it's spectacular. It puts an emphasis on the town, on the region. It's good for the fans. It's good for the towns. I think it's good for cycling as well. And it's in the end, you've always got great winners who are a different kind of riders from typically classic riders or stage race riders. I really, really I've always been a strong advocate of this type of format. So yeah, I love this very much,
Richard.
I've enjoyed it too. I mean, today was very, on the one hand, unfortunate because the weather was not great. Yesterday was a great day for the women's race, and you saw there the potential. Harrogate is a beautiful town, well worth a visit. There were loads of fans here, loads of international visitors. I don't know if the number of fans and visitors has lived up to the expectations or the predictions. It hasn't felt on the same scale as the Grand Départ in 2014 to me, really. Although, you know, out in the course there were huge numbers of fans, but I'd have to see the numbers. But it's certainly very, you know, it's had a more of an international feel to it. You always get, you know, groups of fans from Norway and Holland and these kind of countries. So that's been great. The town itself is lovely. It's a great place to come and stay. I think once as the dust settles, I'm not sure if it will have been a success in terms of, unfortunately, visitor numbers and money, because I've heard one or two stories about, you know, local businesses and even restaurants, places like that, being feeling that it was a bit quiet. I went and bought a jacket, a slightly warmer jacket today from a shop in the middle of Harrogate, and I said, you must be doing a roaring trade, and he said, no, nothing at all, actually, because the town's closed off, people can't really get in. So I think that's often the case, isn't it? And you do hear stories after the event, a place like Bergen, who end up, you know, the thing costs a little bit more than they expected. I don't know, it's been great fun to be here, but my impression is that it maybe hasn't had the same impact and the same sense of you know, just overwhelming numbers as the Yorkshire Grande Parade in 2014.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think certainly from our point of view, we've had a great week, though, haven't we? I mean, our World Championships bike ride and event at the World Top Brewery was, well, it was sold out and very enjoyable. And our event at the Royal Hall on Friday night was pretty spectacular, actually, to be a part of that. And I would just say that, you know, the final weekend, really, despite the weather today, has kind of rescued it on the atmosphere front, because I thought the atmosphere yesterday was really, you know, it was crackling as the race was going on. Today was obviously, you know, it's in, when it rains all day like that, it is quite difficult for people to have the stamina to stay out in it. But the crowds, when the racing was coming around, it was, the laps were frequent enough that people could brave the elements. But it does feel a little bit like it's emptying out again.
Another little thing on the experience of being here, and this was the case in Innsbruck last year as well, and it's been increasingly the case that more and more cycling brands are taking over cafes, bars. So, and Rafa mentioned, you know, about Zwift as well, took over a big bar, and that's a really great thing. It works really well for fans. I think it's a place to go and watch the cycling. They'll have events with, you meet riders and so on. The Zwift events in the evening with some of the world champions have been a great way for them to get some kind of acclaim and for fans to see them in action. And it's adding to the overall sort of package, I think. And I noticed in Innsbruck last year, you know, and Ruler took over a bar there last year and here as well, Ruler Magazine. It's just, you know, it's just making it more of an experience for fans. More, there are more things to do than just come and watch the racing.
It's a great, it's a very interesting point, because as I said before, I've covered alpine skiing a lot in my career, and it's always struck me that there's always been a very, very strong link between alpine skiing and alpine skiing resorts when there's a World Cup or a World Championships, and the brands, the ski brands, all the equipment around skiing, they are directly linked to competitive world of alpine skiing. It was not so much the case in cycling, let's say 10 or 15 years ago, like you had the pros in and, you know, around World Championships, you had the impression that the brands of the bikes and all the equipment, well, you know, were totally separate. You had the pros and you had the amateurs, and the two didn't coexist in a way. And here, and in I suppose in Innsbruck as well, well, you know, it's getting the, now it's the same. I mean, the fans are themselves cyclists, and there's a real link between the two, and it's good for the industry and it's good for the sport.
And it's a great place for them to go and meet other cycling fans as well. So that, as I say, that's been increasingly the case over the last few years, and it kind of reached its it was a bit better here than it was in Innsbruck last year. I'm sure next year in Egg will be the case. It'll be the case again there.
Just on that, lastly, a big thank you to everyone who's come up to us in Harrogate and said hello over the course of the week. It's been quite it's been multiple times a day that people have recognised me and said hello. And Richard and Francois as well. I'm not just me.
I've not recognised you and said hello, Lionel. Including one guy on our way here, James Torbett, stopped us and said hello and complained that he hadn't been read out yet as a friend of the podcast. So thanks very much, James. We forgot to do that during these worlds.
Well, we'll resume that when we're back to regular weekly podcasting. The week after next, we've got an episode of the Cycling Podcast Feminine coming, which focuses on the women's road race with you, Richard, and Rose Manley. And the regular podcast will be back the week after that.
It will. And we've got Friends of the Podcast episodes coming as well soon. So if you want to sign up to, as a friend of the podcast, thecyclingpodcast.com. Also, we've got our tour coming up in November at the Cycling Podcast. Go to live events down the side. And we're doing events in Bristol, Cardiff,
Worcester, Dublin,
Belfast,
London
twice,
Cambridge,
Leicester,
Edinburgh,
Manchester, and that's it. And Francois,
bye guys.
Francois will be joining us for some of those events. So so if you want to come, please check them out on our website. But that's all from the Harrogate World Championships, the Yorkshire World Championships, sorry.
The Harrogate World Championships.
The Yorkshire World Championships.
In Harrogate.
In Harrogate, yeah. In Betty's. The Betty's World Championships. thank you very much. Thank you, Francois.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Lionel.
Thank you, Richard.
You have been listening to The Cycling Podcast. Subscribe to our newsletter at thecyclingpodcast.com to get all the latest news and special offers delivered straight to your inbox. This episode was edited and produced by Tom Wally.